Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey. We could not do it without you, as we say every week, and tonight it was flawless as we plugged into the Blog Talk Radio Network, and away we go with another edition of the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley, and we want to thank Johnny Cash for taking us on that marvelous trip across the United States where he visits 92 cities and states, and yes, he can sing that song, or he did sing that song from memory. He's probably still singing that song. A memory. Emily and Mike, thank you very much, and thanks for giving me a little poke here before the show started. I was so captivated by the latest edition of Journey, and that's the magazine put out by Appalachian Trail. They have a whole section in there on with lovely pictures of people that have done thru hikes, and for those of you who don't know much about the Appalachian Trail, that thru hike means you've done 2,104 miles, and it takes about 6 months, and I'll have more to comment later about that. Just some incredible things about people that have done that. It has a beautiful cover on it, by the way. It has a gentleman dressed in a white tux jacket and playing a cello up on top of a mountain, and they had some symphony work done down on the Appalachian Trail that you should know about. It's a very exciting place if you've never been there. Purpose of our show is what it is every week. I bet you couldn't guess. Harold, our goldfish, knows. It's to discuss news, issues, events, and developments, and the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. One of our news stories tonight is on the order of humor. I hope we don't get in trouble because it involves religion to some degree. But our show is dedicated to all those police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who serve us throughout the world in the United States and do an admirable job. I want to think what life would be like without these people. Sure, they slip up once in a while, but this is a very distinct minority that does that. What we tried to do on this show was to look inside criminal justice practice and take a close-up look at its professionals. And I might mention relative to that, I can post the website for you, but we're going to have our first oral history posted for the Ohio Criminal Justice Oral History Association, a little group of people that like oral histories and have done some oral histories, have gotten together, and what we're going to try to do is try to collect the life records of all these police, sports, correction, juvenile justice professionals, not all of them, of course, but many of them. The first one we're going to put up there is all done. It was done by Jeff Carson, a graduate of the university where I teach the graduate degree program, and he did an oral history several years back with Bennett Cooper, Dr. Bennett Cooper, who was the first director of the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, and that was back in the 60s when it broke away from the Department of Mental Health and became a distinct unit on its own. It's a marvelous oral history, and Dr. Bennett Cooper and Jeff Carson have been very active in the National Association of Blacks in Criminal Justice. In fact, I've had Jeff on the radio show at least one time to talk about that, and he did a marvelous job with this oral history. But Bennett Cooper was born. He was also the first black prison director of a state prison system in the United States. He was born in Muskogee, Oklahoma. And he says in the oral history that had it not been for Merle Haggard singing that song, Okie from Muskogee, no one would have ever known where Muskogee is. I've been to Muskogee numerous times, and it's a very pleasant place. Well, you're listening on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and get your own show is what I always say. But Alan Levy, we want to thank him as often as we can for providing this opportunity, and who knows how many shows there are. I can't count them anymore. I remember when there were dozens, and then there were hundreds, and now there's thousands. And any person, any interest group, any organization can have their own radio show. They can broadcast live and streaming audio all over the world to an unlimited number of listeners, and it doesn't cost a penny. It costs nothing. And that is just incredible. So anybody's got anything to pitch, push, talk about, blog about, at least verbally, you can do it on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Get your own show is what I say. tonight's show, we're going to do something. I love old-time radio, which folks know, and we have a lot of news tonight, probably more than I have time for, with so much going on with the prosecution of these terrorists in New York City and in a regular, we're calling it civilian court, but the federal court system there versus the military tribunals that they could face and some others are facing. But tonight our show is going to be about Jack Webb. He started a little summer series back in 1951 called Pete Kelly's Blues, where he plays the part of a band leader who plays a cornet. And our show tonight is called Little Jake, and I think you'll enjoy that. Old-time radio is valuable for a lot of reasons, and one of the things I think it does for us is help us listen. And I think some people, maybe some young people today, need a little more practice doing that. you can call in if you want on the show during the news segment, 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. Tonight we're going to start again with an Audrey Bond joke. And Audrey, if you joined for the first time tonight, is a Bond, and she's from London, England, actually grew up there. And she's been a collector of Bond jokes for a long time. And let me reiterate, she is a Bond. And she's got one tonight that she told me is too short. Well, Audrey, I don't know if it's too short. How could it be too short? We'll go ahead and let's listen to it.
Professor Haley, here is one of our shortest blonde jokes for the show, but it is a funny one. Here it is. During a recent password audit, it was found that a blonde was using the following password: Mickey, Minnie, Pluto, Huey, Louie, Dewey, Donald, and Goofy. When asked why such a big password, she said that it had to be at least 8 characters long.
Who are we doing? Well, that's excellent. One of our news stories tonight, by the way, just a really bad thing. I know, Mike, that you're very concerned about this, but it's another story with documented evidence that shows that firearm sales are going up again in the United States. So if you want to invest in something, I see a million ads a day on television and radio for buying gold. It sounds like you ought to be buying some good old-fashioned firearms hardware. But on a much more serious note, the Ohio Coalition against Firearms wants you to hear their particular public service message. And I know this is directed toward the criminals of the nation, that they will go and turn in their guns. And as we said last week, you don't have to just turn them in. Find a place that's doing a gun buyout. It's no questions asked. You turn them in. We talked about Newark, New Jersey last week. He's giving you $200 for a piece of junk type of firearm. So maybe Newark's going to be doing that again. Go to it. Here's the Coalition's message.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition. And again, folks, please take heed of that message. Well, you know, every week we've been trying to do a green tip here as of late. We're trying to sustain the planet. I haven't bought it and read it yet. Any of you folks done it? Mike hasn't? Emily hasn't? Audrey hasn't? Well, do you plan to? What am I talking about? Al Gore apparently has a new book out about sustainability of the planet and how dire the consequences are. I think it's called Our Choice or Choice or something like that. I'll try to rush down to the bookstore tomorrow in between my business appointments and get a copy of that and read it up. Somebody's already saying that there are doctored photos in this book. I think that he was accused of that the last time, but well, Pope Gore is very serious about saving the planet, and so are we. And so here's our green tip of the night. You know when you brush your teeth? I don't know. What's the normal length of time to use a toothbrush? Anybody? Mike? 3 months? 3 months? 6 weeks? I don't know. A year? A year? Well, maybe not a year. I don't know. But the tip for tonight is don't throw your toothbrush away. And I can't tell you how far this green tip goes back for me, because they're saying that toothbrush could be used to scrub things in your house, for example, little creases in your floor and that type of business, and you can do it without using any type of those harsh cleansers, because the toothbrush will be stiff enough with just old-fashioned, you know, the universal solvent is water, correct? So you just use toothbrush and water and maybe just a little normal kind of soap to get that done, and in addition, you're saving the plastic. Now, you know how far back this tip goes for me. as a Marine in boot camp, we used to do exactly that. We used our toothbrush continuously through boot camp and did not replace it. But the DIs, the drill instructors, had funny ideas about that. They liked you to take everything out of your barracks, your bunk beds, all your gear, everything there was, and then scrub it down with toothbrushes and put all your stuff back in. So about once a week in boot camp, especially if you didn't act real well, your platoon, they would do this. You'd get to use your toothbrush to scrub the inside of the barracks. So the Marine Corps was on that a long time ago, and just a marvelous green tip. Now, this relates to a news story. I think I'll just take care of it right now in terms of a green tip. I guess you probably have read that California now is, they are really into watching their energy use. They're right there with Al Gore thinking that they're going to drift off the planet, I guess, pretty soon. But their little Department of Energy has come up with a scheme, and they figured out that, look, if you're buying one of these great big flat screen televisions, do you know how many watts those things use per whatever unit of time? They've decided that these things are just suck up energy, and it's taking too much energy because California may run out of it. I don't know that with all those illegals, they could harness them up to do something, and it seems like they could run generators or whatever, but that's another subject. But anyway, if you're going to have one of these big screen TVs and it burns more than 183 watts per whatever, you're going to get taxed for it, and then the manufacturers who make them are going to have to spend extra money also in the way of taxes. But isn't that incredible? Now, I find it amazing, just in juxtaposition to that particular step that California is going to take, is that this is a state that I guess they were busy counting watts and they weren't counting dollars in their state legislature and the budget, because California is now, right now, $21 billion in debt. That's their deficit in the state of California. Can you believe that? $21 billion. But here they've been spending their time counting watts. Just absolutely amazing. Let's take a look at some of the news stories here before we get to our feature show tonight with Pete Kelly's Blues and the episode called Little Jake. kind of interesting one starting out here. I found this a bit unusual, but, you know, if you work in a prison environment, you could almost say what isn't unusual. We got this gentleman over in Germany, and let me talk to you about him here just a second. He is a convicted bank robber, and he happens to be a Buddhist, and he's been requesting that he be allowed, his cat be allowed to visit him in prison. I've never actually heard of that before, but again, if you work in the prison system, I'm sure this has happened here in the United States too. But what's a little different about this one is that he believed that the cat is his mother, and apparently it's a Buddhist belief, as Peter Koenig believes. He's serving 5 years for armed robbery in poor old Germany, and he believes that the cat has been reincarnated as his mother has been reincarnated as this cat. So his claim is here that he's really being denied a privilege that the other prisoners have, the right to see their mother, and he's not being allowed to see his cat, which he believes to be his mother. He said that he knows that it's his mother. She looks after me just the way she did. He says, I need to see her like other prisoners get to see their wives and children. The court actually heard this case. Imagine spending time on something like this. Our frivolous prisoner suits are about the same. One of my favorite ones was the guy that went to the hospital to treat his medical condition. And in the hospital, they only had 4 TV channels. But when he was in prison, he had 32 cable channels. And he was saying that this was cruel and unusual punishment. The court didn't go along with that. But anyway, the court said this: while we respect the religious freedom of individuals, the accused has not been able to furnish proof that his deceased mother has been reborn in a cat. Therefore, the request to visit the feline is rejected. The court said that he would be allowed, though, to write to the cat. So he won't stop the correspondence. They won't stop the correspondence to the cat. That's almost too much, isn't it? You know, Arizona is busy in trying to reduce illegal immigration. Another news story here. And the Maricopa County Attorney, Andrew Thomas, he's prosecuting the manager of a place called the Scottsdale Art Factory, who used a subordinate contractor to hire illegal immigrants to avoid the state's law that says employers cannot hire illegal workers. So what he tried to do is use a go-between so that he couldn't be prosecuted, but the county attorney there is going to pick up that case and prosecute him anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking outside of Ohio, and I know some people are listening outside of Ohio, and I know some people are, Ohio's been in this quandary on how to execute somebody. We had a guy here several months ago that they worked on him about 2 hours, and they couldn't find enough veins to inject the poison that would kill him. Prison officials in Ohio never planned to become pioneers, it says in this article, on death penalty protocol, but it looks like they're going to. They failed with this man named Rommel Brome, a convicted killer, and it forced the state to do some rethinking on this. And the approach entails switching to a single drug. That's what they're going to do. I think I mentioned that last week, but there's now more to the story. The single drug rather than the 3-drug cocktail, you have to stick them more times. Oh, while Ohio's policy change could influence other states, the Ohio officials say that their decision has less to do with national debate than a number of more local considerations. He thought they'd get sued anyway, says Terry Collins, who's director of the Ohio Department of Rehab and Corrections. He said, with this new approach, we have a plan that works, and we have a backup plan when it's really needed. And here's what's going to happen. They're going to give them one big dose of anesthetic to kill the inmate. Can we say kill? The journalist actually said that in the article. But to execute the inmate. If that fails, what they're going to do is the first would be into the inmate's veins, the injection. If that doesn't work, intravenous, then they're going to insert 2 different chemicals into the inmate's muscles. And these things are called midazolam and hydromorphone, I guess. sounds like that, looks like that, but they're going to inject those directly into the inmate's muscles. So they've got a two-step process here if they need it. The first big dose doesn't work, which most folks think it would. Veterinarians have been encouraging that for a long time. If that doesn't do it, or they can't find the vein, then they're just going to shoot it into his muscles. Some death penalty experts have questioned why Ohio did not just abandon the intravenous approach a long time ago in favor of the intramuscular. The article goes on and on, but they brought on experts who have said that, look, sometimes that muscular thing isn't going to work either. Gee, I wonder what things would work right away if we didn't do either one of those two. I think it's Nevada still has the firing squad, short distance, maybe 7 yards away, five shots, four of them are four real shots, and I think they die instantly, but we're not going to do that. They said that their approach here in Ohio was widely agreeable to defense attorneys in many different death penalty cases. Why not opt for something the governor says, this is according to Governor Strickland, that's quicker, familiar, and less open to legal challenge. And by the way, Ohio has a law that state officials here believe that this will work out. Ohio has a law that does not protect the anonymity of the people involved in the execution. Some states actually do that. So therefore, Ohio's had a lot of trouble getting doctors to assist them in the execution. In other words, their names go public, and some other states, I don't know what number that would be, that's not the case. There's a real good series on National Public Radio about executions, and they actually interview a guy on there he's been involved in like 93 of them in Texas. Isn't that incredible? But anyway, it's a difficult job, and all these expert commentators are saying Ohio's right, Ohio's wrong, that type of thing. We'll have to wait and see what happens in this particular case. But we go through a lot to try to figure out the right way, and I understand, and I think everybody understands the purpose of all this, is to try to make this as less dramatic and as humane as possible, if you can do that when you're actually taking someone's life. But a little different than 1950 in Ohio or before. 1950s used to be executed locally or prior to that time. And then the last public execution in the United States was in late 1930s, and that was in Owensboro, Kentucky, and 15,000 people attended to watch that execution. I wonder how many would come now. I guess we'd probably still get crowds. Well, look, New York State is getting real strict on DWI cases, and a couple of cataclysmic events occurred to make this change, and they're making it a felony now to drive while intoxicated with a child in the vehicle, and this would require first-time convicted drunken drivers to buy a device that prevents them from driving their cars, and that's one of these interlock devices where you have to breathe into it, and if your alcohol content is too high, then your vehicle will not operate. They will be joining about a dozen states that force drivers convicted for the first time of drunk driving to use this particular interlock device. Sounds like a pretty good idea to me. This one woman, boy, what a tragic case she was involved in. She drove the wrong way on Taconic Parkway in Westchester County. She killed 8 people, including her 2-year-old daughter and 3 young nieces. And her alcohol content was 0.19, and that was more than double the 0.08 that qualified them for being intoxicated. There are more stories here. There was another one that occurred also. But that sounds like a pretty reasonable thing to do, unless you're a total libertarian and don't buy into those kind of things. I thought this was, I'm not trying to overdo the green thing tonight, but in tribute to Al Gore, we're spending a little time on this, and it seems like people are paying more money for airline tickets, and I didn't realize that even the major airlines provide this opportunity now, but in 2002, a company named Responsible Travel became one of the first travel companies to offer customers the option of buying so-called carbon offsets to counter the planet warming emissions generated by airline flights. Last month, that company canceled the program, saying that while it might help transferees or travelers feel virtuous, it's not helping to reduce global emissions. In fact, it said company officials, some might be traveling more because they can buy these carbon offsets. And here's what they say. This is a quote. Carbon offset has become the magic pill, a kind of get-out-of-jail-free card, says Justin France. France is the managing director of Responsible Travel, one of the world's largest green travel companies to embrace environmental sustainability. It's seductive to the consumer who says, it's $4 and I'm a carbon neutral so I can fly all the way. So what happens, you fly and you feel guilty about it, and your plane, of course, is emitting all those terrible emissions. What you can do is pay anywhere from, I guess it's $5 to $40 per flight, and then that money goes to some carbon offset company that promises to plant a tree, bag a cow. I don't know what they do with it, but they're going to do something to offset those particular emissions. I'm announcing right now that if you're willing, I mean, I am willing, if you would feel better about, if you're breathing too much, or if you're running out on the trail, have a hard exercise, or your car burned a little extra and you've driven an extra 200 miles, 300 miles the next weekend, if you will send me $100, I will promise to use that money in a way that would reduce carbon emissions. And yes, go ahead. Mike, would you go ahead and get ready to announce where they can send that in the mail? But I sincerely will do that. I will do that for you. I have some ideas on how I could reduce carbon emissions for you. Here's the story about gun sales going up. Boy, it's just incredible. And I'm not going to take a lot of time with this, but it's the fear of the recession that leads to people going out and buying guns, apparently. They think if people lose their jobs, they're going to go out and shoot people up and commit robberies and armed burglaries and this type of thing. But it says all over America, demand for firearms and ammunition is rising, and concerns that rising unemployment, which passed 10% this past month, will lead inexorably to higher rates of crime. And fears of terrorism helped to spark that also. But Smith & Wesson, their sales are expected to rise 30% here very shortly in the first quarter of the next financial year. Isn't that incredible? After growing by more than 13% the preceding year. One of these other companies, I've never heard of the Sturm and Ruger, their sales are up 70% from the same period last year. Isn't that incredible? And it has nothing to do with the president, they said. It has to do with the economy. President, economy, well, I guess they don't have anything to do with each other. But that's absolutely incredible, isn't it? Speaking of guns, the last story we'll get to our radio show. But cops released some information because the ACLU made them do it. New York City last year in 2008 shot fewer people than they did since they started keeping records in 1971. Isn't that incredible? So that's a good thing, isn't it? The police are shooting fewer people, and I suppose that in 2008 there were 105 incidents in which cops fired their weapons, down from 111 last year. There was also a 38% drop in the number of shots fired, 364. Down from 588. Remember, we reported a long time on the show before that New York City cops only hit the target about one out of three shots. And that's within seven, eight yards. All that firearms training, when it comes down to push down to shove and things get tense, it's very hard to hit the target. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move off of that and go right now to our show, Pete Kelly's Blues. Radio show. This is an old-time radio show, and you can find a little bit about it on the internet, but it starred Jack Webb, and it only lasted from July until September, and then I think Jack Webb moved on to the actual Dragnet show later on. But I hope you enjoy this one. It's called Pete Kelly's Blues is the series, and the story is entitled Little Jake.
This one's about Pete Kelly. It's about about the world he goes around in. It's about the big music and the big trouble and the big 20s. So when they ask you, tell them this one's about the blues. Pete Kelly's Blues. Pete Kelly's Blues, starring Jack Webb, with story by Jim Moser and music by Dick Cathcart. Cornet. You'll find us at 417 Cherry Street, Kansas City. It's a standard speakeasy. We got 35 cases of cut whiskey and a 7-piece band. We start every night at 10 and we play till 6 in the morning. It's not much, but the contract runs out in June 1924. After that, there's a place in South Chicago that may take us. In the meantime, we're working here on Cherry Street. The lease is made out to George Lupo. His brother gave it to him after the funeral. The kind of music we play started out as a backroom exercise in a little swamp stop called Myrtle Grove. La Rocca took his Dixieland band to Reisenweber's in New York. We got as far as Kansas City. It's no place to get off a train unless you're a sack of mail. Because around here, everybody works at the same job, staying alive. Half a buck buys a pair of socks, a spaghetti dinner, or a down payment on murder. Well, last night, everything turned sour about midnight. The town was down on its hands and knees trying to crawl through one of those Kansas City hot spells that blast by every third day. It was heat and headaches all the way. Our drummer Nick was dragging the beat, and I went bad 12 bars in on the Memphis Blues. Well, I figured we better cut the set short, so we started to fight our way through one chorus of Roses of Picardy. That's when the kid came in and stood by the bandstand. He was tall enough to see over a quart of milk with a face the size of a minute and just about as young.
All right, let's get off for a while.
Who's your friend, Pete?
I don't know, but he must be tone deaf.
Hey, Mr. Kelly, Mr. Kelly.
Yeah, son.
I heard you play. You sound good.
We've been better. What's on your mind?
Father Cronin sent me to see you.
Are you doing a little missionary work?
Oh, no, sir, nothing like that. I'm an altar boy over there. Father calls me Little Jake.
I sure got you working the late shift.
I've been trying to get a hold of you all day. Father wants a favor.
Well, make it a small one. I'm all out of the big ones.
And he just wanted to know if you could come by St. Timothy's and see him. He said tomorrow morning right after the 9 o'clock.
Okay. Tell him he keeps terrible hours. I'll be there.
Thanks, Mr. Kelly.
Hey, Kelly.
Yeah, that's right.
Tell the kid goodbye.
He knows his way out.
Should I go, Mr. Kelly?
Be the kid.
Yes, sir. Goodbye, Mr. Kelly.
Yeah, goodbye, Jake.
You got someplace private we'd like to talk?
This is my office.
Now listen hard, bright eyes. There's enough gun in this coat to blow you right through the wall.
I'll take your word for it.
We come in nice and you get funny mouth.
Now you got someplace we can talk.
I can't leave. I gotta do a number.
Do it.
We'll be right here about 10 feet from your stomach.
Yeah. All right. Let's go.
You look sick, Pete. What's the matter?
I feel fine. Who's sorry now? Everybody ready? Let's go.
Thank you.
right, you proved it. Now let's go.
Yeah. Keep them going, Red.
How many shall we do, Pete?
If this works out, about 10 minutes' worth. Let's go.
The alley will do. We need a favor, Kelly.
Yeah, there's a run on them tonight.
Give me the envelope, Dix.
Yeah.
You got an inside coat pocket, Kelly?
Come on, come on. Either throw up half the dice.
Hold him, Dix. Pull him up, Dix.
Come on. Up.
Now, this is how. Here's an envelope. It goes in your inside coat pocket, and it stays there until 6 o'clock tomorrow night. You don't open it. You don't mess with it.
What happens at 6 o'clock?
You'll be the first to know.
Well, I stood there in the alley and watched them walk away. Inside, Lupo was blowing up a storm. Something about paying for a 7-piece band and only having 6. Well, it wasn't worth trying to get back on the stand. I got a cab and went up to my room. I tried to get to sleep. It was no good. I got up. I was sick to my stomach. After that, I went to sleep. The next morning, I made a pass at some breakfast and tried to look through the sports page. Harry Heilman got 4 for 5 against the Red Sox, but that's all I read. That envelope had me. People have been taken out in alleys before, and they've been worked over, usually to get something away from them, not to give it to them. No matter how I tried to put it together, it wouldn't come out. Thin or fat, it wouldn't slice. I had the envelope, and I had to wait till 6 o'clock. Well, I gave up on the coffee, and I started over to see Father Cronin. It was a little after 9:30 when I started up the steps of St. Timothy's. I figured Mass was almost over, so I hung around in the vestibule for a couple of minutes, trying to look like a part-time bell ringer.
Hi, Mr. Kelly.
Hello, Jake.
Father's back in the sacristy, Mr. Kelly. He said for me to show you the way.
They move it?
No, sir.
All right, Jake. Show me the way.
This way, Mr. Kelly. Down this aisle.
Well, I guess I was too busy trying to act like I knew my way around to pay much attention to a fat, chunky little guy wearing a brown Borsellino hat. He stood up in a back pew a couple of aisles over. The church was empty except for the three of us. Little Jake found out about it just before I did.
Mr. Kelly, that man back there.
All right, mister. I'll take that envelope.
Jake, get out.
Mr. Kelly, look out. Look out.
Kansas City, you learn early to look for trouble, any place, any time, but this is the first time it caught up with me in the middle of a church. The last 3 shots were a waste of money. Jake went down like young wheat in a hailstorm. When I grabbed for him, I hit my head on the base of a marble pillar. I lost the edge right there. By the time I hit the street, he was gone. I guess I covered every alley and street in the neighborhood, but it was like trying to wash a pail of dirty water. I don't know how much later it was when I stopped for a minute in an empty doorway and tried to remember what I was chasing. Well, a siren was crying off somewhere in the distance, and I started back for the church. The coroner's wagon was just pulling away as I got there. I didn't see Father Cronin around, so I went back to the rectory and rang the bell. He came to the door in his shirt sleeves. He stood there for a minute just looking at me. Then he motioned me inside.
In here. Sit down.
The kid, Father, little Jake.
He's dead. You want to blow by blow?
Yeah, I know, Father. I was there.
Sure you were there. You're always there. I should have known better than to call you. I should have known it meant trouble.
Oh, wait a minute, Father. This wasn't my party.
I called you here today to ask you a favor, Pete.
Yeah, I know.
You don't know. It's too late now. We were going to have an altar boys picnic tomorrow at Washington Park. I wanted you to play a little music for us. We won't be going now, Pete. We got a funeral instead.
Yeah. What do you want me to say?
Don't say anything, Pete. If you've got any private fights, that's your business. But don't bring your beast into the church.
I never saw the guy before, Father.
Don't kid me. He didn't come in here to shoot little Jake.
Now, look, I know this is hard to understand.
You bet it's hard to understand. We've been over it before, but you ran with the same pack. You hung on to the same friends. You had it all figured out. Well, you figured this one, Pete. There's a 9-year-old boy on his way to the morgue. He took a gangster's bullet that you earned. Now you go ahead. Figure it.
I got this envelope.
I don't want an explanation. Take your excuses and peddle them where you need them. For the bootleggers and the gunmen. Take them to your crowd.
This envelope, Father. They shoved it in my pocket. I was out in the alley behind the club. 2 guys. They worked me over. I didn't think they'd try anything like this.
Neither did little Jake.
All right, Father. I told you I was sorry.
Go on home.
Why don't you stop cutting at me and say a prayer for that kid?
I would, but I'm too busy praying for people like you.
Well, you couldn't blame him. How do you explain away a dead kid lying in front of an altar rail? All I could offer was a 2-cent envelope in my coat pocket and a wild night in an alley. I started to walk back to my room. I tried to paste up some kind of an answer, but I got nothing.
I was halfway home when the last breeze left town and went someplace to cool off. My clothes were soaking wet, and I decided to take a cab the rest of the way. I reached in my pocket, and all I had was 23 cents, so I kept walking. Sunday morning's the same in any town. Empty streets and everybody home trading the comic section and living off of Saturday night. You could live here all your life, and on Sunday morning, you just got in town. It was about noon when I got to my hotel. I went up to the second floor and unlocked my door. They were sitting on the bed. Their coats were off, and they'd hung them on the back of a chair. The same two boys had given me the envelope last night.
Got a real hot room here, Kelly. You ought to move off this cord.
Yeah, next time I'll get twin beds.
Is everything all right with that envelope?
It made a murder, mister. You take it.
Put it back in your pocket.
Now get this, both of you. There's a lot of something wrong here. I've had my turn. You find yourself another fall guy. There's a lot of inside coat pockets in this town. Look for a new one.
We like yours, and that's where it's going to stay. Now, you don't listen good. Me and Dex put it out last night, and you didn't pick up on it. We got you on board, and we'll tell you when to get off.
6 o'clock, boy.
How long do you think this jag will last? Look, I'm cashing in. I've had enough.
What were you doing this morning, trying to pray your way out?
The priest wanted a favor.
I got it, Lon.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in. No, he's busy. From 2 to 5. Sure, come on up.
Benny.
He went for it, huh?
On his way up. We're going to stay a while, Kelly.
Well, there's only 3 chairs. I'll make it easy for you.
Stay put, mister.
No, he's your friend. I'm checking out.
The first time you've been right.
Well, it happened so fast, I didn't even see his arm move. My knees buckled and I pitched forward. I don't know how long I laid there, but when I opened my eyes, the afternoon sun was almost gone. What was left of it was bleeding through a rip in the blind. Well, I could hear somebody breathing hard like a fat man on a hot day, and when I rolled over, I saw him. A tough prohibition agent by the name of Cage. The weather didn't make any difference to Cage. He always looked that way. His collar was wilted, and it looked like Arrow's first try. His necktie was pulled down, and the knot was twisted. The heat had worked him over so that the front of his shirt was splotchy and damp. Reminded you of a first raider's map of the world. He was sitting in a chair with his arms draped over the back and his head resting on his hands. He was smoking a Milo Violet, but it didn't help that much. His mouth was wound around a toothy grin, and he looked like a mountain lion who'd just eaten her young.
You can get up now, Keller. You made your point.
Yeah, sure. How long you been here?
Long enough to fill out your book and slip. You're going to jail, mister.
What for? Sleeping on the floor?
For the dead guy on the bed. Who is he?
I don't know. How'd he get there?
You put him there after you shot him. Now get your hat.
Look, Prohibition's your racket. Dead bodies are out of your line.
Not when I find him in your room. Now let's go downtown. We'll both tell homicide. We'll find the details later.
Cage, you couldn't find yourself in a mirror. I didn't have anything to do with this, and you know it. I've been out for the last 3 hours. This happened after they slugged
me. Save it for the jury. All I know is I got a phone tip to check room 205. I come up here and I find you and a dead guy. That's all I need. You can dress it up fancy and make it look cute, but it still comes out murder.
There's enough liquor in this town to float it away, and you're wasting your time with a killing that's none of your business.
You're my business, big shot. Somebody put 2 pounds of lead in Benny's chest, and you're my pick.
Benny who?
Benny Davis. He worked for Mike Quinlan. You look pale.
Yeah, I'm just beginning to feel the squeeze. Mike Quinlan on one side, and those 2 trigger men that you let walk out of here on the other.
You got it, and I'll be turning the handle.
Now, before you start worrying about your picture in the paper, you better turn up the 2 guys that were here with me.
That part of the same dream?
They gave me an envelope to hold for him. The price on it's going up by the minute. A 9-year-old kid died for it, and this guy here on the bed.
That's a good story. Do you write him down or just make him up?
Look, you got nothing on me, and I haven't got much time. I'm leaving you.
That's all right. I call downtown. The minute you hit the street, they'll pick you up.
In the meantime, you better come up with more than you got. They don't hang you in this state on a hunch.
I'm going to check this room over. I'll find all we need.
You couldn't find your head with both hands. Goodbye, Cage.
All right, you got till midnight, big shot, and then I'll be around.
Yeah.
I'll have it all set up. All we'll need is time to run the extra.
Well, I could have used a cold shower, but with Cage there, I didn't have the room to dry off. I went down the hall and headed down the back stairs. I figured even if Cage was right about calling downtown, I might have an edge if I moved fast enough. The sun was on the downgrade, but it didn't make any difference. It'd done a good job all day, and the heat was boiling up out of the ground. Well, if I was going to come out at all, I had to have some help. So I started to look for the only honest guy I know, an ex-bootlegger by the name of Barney Ricketts. The only bootlegger in the country that went broke in 1922. He drank himself out of business. I phoned 8 different places and tried 4. Nobody'd seen him. I was about ready to give up when I finally found him sitting in the middle of a bourbon fog in a little Spanish joint somewhere on the edge of the East Bottoms. He was sitting at a back table trying his best to make time with a plaster bust of Queen Isabella.
No.
Ah, Petey, my boy, you're just in time. I'm not quite certain, but I think the young lady here has a friend.
I got to talk to you, Barlow.
If you're any good at all with Spanish, now is the time. I was positive she'd loosen up on this second bottle of wine, but no, she's utterly uncharitable, and I think she's a picture of a perfect boy.
Yeah, all right, Barlow.
To a member of the old Castilian school, there can be no excuse for the conduct she's exhibited.
Yeah.
Why, do you know I was even good enough to buy her 3 rounds of Portuguese brandy? Imported, mind you. But what do I get for my pains? Not even a civil thank you.
All right, listen to me, will you, Barlow?
I've been sitting here in the most gentlemanly fashion, sipping this delicate nectar and trying vainly to keep the party going. But does she help? No! I've talked to her about politics, medicine, literature, Keats, Byron, Shelley, Faith Baldwin. I've even talked about the weather.
Barney, she's a statue.
Oh, a simple oversight, Petey. It could happen to anyone.
Now, look, I'm in trouble.
Of course you're in trouble. You'll always be in trouble because you're a child of adversity, a son of scorn. The fate spit in your eye and you try to retaliate, but the wind's always blowing in the wrong direction. You're a lost leaf in the mortal storm, Petey. You're a pebble shaking a tiny fist at the mountain. You'd like to fight for some strange, fantastic cause, wouldn't you? But you can't find anybody your size. Men are too small and the gods are too big. Petey, you're lost.
You all through now?
Yes. What kind of trouble?
A pair of bum murder raps. Somebody slugged me in my room and I woke up with a dead guy.
Dubious honor. You mentioned 2 murders.
One of them was an altar boy over at St. Timothy's. The other guy worked for Mike Quinlan.
The same Quinlan that controls most of the Canadian import here in town?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, time's short. Let's finish the brandy.
2 guys started all this at the club last night. Names are Ludd and Dex. Mean anything to you?
This'll all sound better with more brandy. You picked 2 of Quinlan's first string. Ludd Sandell and Dex Porter, both killers.
Look, they gave me an envelope to hang on to. Now nose around. See if you can find out what it all means. The dead guy up in my room, his name's Benny Davis. See if you can find out where he fits in, will you?
It'd be a lot simpler if you just joined Quinlan's gang. Benny Davis holds a card in the same organization.
Well, how about Ludd and Dex? Any bad blood between them and
Davis? If there is, it doesn't show. They're closer than unborn peas.
You sure about that, Barney?
Police blotter can't be that wrong. Benny's sister will tell you the same thing.
Well, where do I find her?
Chelsea Apartments. Beautiful girl, Petey. When you're my age, she'll disturb your memories.
All right, now get going, will you? See how close you can get to Quinlan's headquarters. Find out what you can about Ludd and Dex and Benny Davis. Maybe Quinlan's got him on a special job or something. Find out what it is, will you?
You find me in a temporary economic slump, Petey. I'll need carfare.
Yeah, well, that makes 2 of us. I'm broke. You'll have to do it on foot.
Oh, well, I have friends here, and my credit's unlimited.
Well, hurry up, will you, Barney?
1 moment. Alfonso, would you loan me $1.50?
Come on, let's go.
He's only bluffing. He won't shoot.
Well, Barney headed down toward Bale Street for Mike Quinlan's place, and I started cross town for the North End and the Chelsea Apartments. I couldn't begin to work it out. If Dex and Ludd were such good friends with Benny Davis, why did they kill him? And if they didn't do it, who planted his body in my room and why? Well, I was running way late, and there wasn't much time to catch up. I finally found the Chelsea Apartments on the corner of Stocker and Bales, with an old 3-story wooden frame. I checked the mailbox, and Louise Davis was down for apartment 17. Well, inside, the hallway was dark, and a couple of gas jets were smoking up the ceiling. There was a potted palm by the foot of the stairs, and it looked like it was growing out of old gum wrappers and cigar butts. Apartment 17 was at the rear of the first floor. She answered the door, and you could tell right away Barney was right. She was pretty, and she had enough smile to last you for years.
Yes?
You Louise Davis?
That's right. I can do better for you. You're Pete Kelly. I've heard you play.
Yeah, well, so far you're batting 1,000. Can I come in?
Yeah, sure. You didn't bring your band, so it must be a social call.
I'll make this short. It's about Benny.
What about him?
That's what I want to know. He's got a couple of friends. I got to know about him.
Benny isn't that popular. You mean Ludd and Dex?
They'll do. They got trouble, and they're cutting me in.
What kind of trouble?
No, I'm not sure. That's why I came to you.
I can't help you. They never tell me what they're doing.
Well, they gave me an envelope. They told me to hold it till 6 o'clock tonight.
You haven't got any problem. You'll know in an hour.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm tired. I want to know now. I'll take any lead you got.
They found out I told you this. They might not like it. They got some kind of a beef with Quinlan.
Does Mike know about it?
I wouldn't know. I just heard him talking one night. They're not happy with the money Quinlan gives them.
They got any plans?
I don't think we better talk about this. Let me get you a drink, huh?
Now, look, this is the last trip around for me, lady. I got to have everything you know.
You said something about an envelope, didn't you?
That's right.
You got it?
Right here.
If you open it, you'll understand everything.
Well, they gave it to me sealed. They want it back the same way.
If you want to be around to give it back, you'd better open it.
You got a guarantee handy?
All I know is the 3 of them are working on something big. I don't know what it is, but I heard some talk about an envelope. It's your choice. If you ask for a lead and you got it.
Yeah, we'll hold hands when they cut me down. You got a letter opener?
Pete, look out!
Well, it all happened faster than a Mexican divorce. Louise Davis was dead before the echo left the room. Well, I got to the window, but whoever did the shooting was gone. I grabbed the envelope, and on my way out, I took another look at her. There wasn't anything left but the smile. I cut through a couple of back lots and down an alley. I stopped in a doorway and opened the envelope. Inside was a handful of typewritten sheets. Looked like a lot of headache for five pieces of paper. And then the bell rang. Two of them were consignment slips for 8,000 gallons of high-grade Canadian whiskey. The other three slips were detailed breakdowns for a convoy of trucks. They showed special truck routes over the Canadian border into the States to miss the hijackers and the prohibition agents. They showed a day-by-day schedule for each truck on its trip down from the border. Well, it's not too tough to hijack a load of booze, but when you got it laid out right down to the time, the place, and how many bottles, it's like money in the bank. Well, I knew right then why the envelope meant so much to Lud and Dex. What I couldn't understand was where they got it, why they gave it to me to hang on to. Well, maybe they were working for Quinlan, but why didn't he have the papers, and why weren't they in his safe? Mike had a big one. Well, the questions were still piling up. It was an outside chance, but I couldn't stand still, so I crossed over to the Kansas side and headed down Boulder Road to Fat Annie's place. Maggie Jackson did two things good. She sang the blues better than the guy who wrote them, and she could pick up an idle rumor at 3 miles.
Hi, Pete.
Maggie, what do you know?
I knew you'd be here tonight. You always come in together. Trouble and Pete Kelly.
Yeah, I know. I never come around except when I need something.
As long as I have it to give, you got it. It's Mike Quinlan this time, ain't it?
Well, that's part of it. I'm in it up to my ears.
You got an envelope, I heard.
Yeah?
Mike Quinlan and some of his boys have been here about an hour ago. They tore the paper off the walls looking for you and Dex and Lud.
Dex and Lud?
Mike wants all three of you.
Yeah, anything else?
No. Barney Ricketts called for you.
Did he leave a number?
He's still waiting on the phone. I took the call. He said you'd end up here, so he just hung on.
Well, I'll get it right now.
Yeah, the boss is kind of mad. The phone's been tied up for 2 hours.
All right, thanks, Maggie.
Sure, and good luck, Pete.
Hello, Barney.
There you are, Petey.
That'll be $1.25 for another 3 minutes.
Yes, all right, operator. Alfonso, 5 more quarters, please. No, no, the quarters. Just a minute, Petey. Alfonso doesn't know the quarters from the house.
Yeah, well, hurry up. What's going on, Barney? Where are you?
Fort Madison, Iowa. I'm troubleshooting for you, Pete.
Well, what'd you find out?
It's a double cross. Mike Quinlan's involved in one of the biggest deals of his career, and Benny Davis, along with Dex and Lud, stole the consignment papers.
Yeah, I know. That's what's in the envelope.
You better get them back to Quinlan. I understand he's been tearing up the town for them.
Well, what do I do about Dex and Lud?
She might easily end up like Benny Davis. Seems Lud and Dex didn't want to split it 3 ways, so they killed him.
You sure about all this?
That's why I'm up here in Iowa. I suggest that you join us.
No, I'll see you when you get back.
It's been a gay, mad world, Petey. We drove 60 miles an hour all the way up here.
Yeah?
Alfonso's drunk. He thinks the phone's a slot machine. He's waiting for the payoff.
Well, as soon as I hung up the phone, everything fell into place. I had one big worry, to get back to the club and unload those papers before Quinlan caught up with me. Well, almost everything made sense now, except the killing of Louise Davis, Benny's sister. It was easy to see why they dropped Benny along the way, but why his sister? How did she tie in? Well, on the way back to town, I mulled over a couple of possibilities, and I figured maybe I came up with the answer. I started back for town, and it was rough all the way. I kept thinking any minute I'd bump into Mike Quinlan, and I couldn't be sure that I'd lost Dex and Lud. It was almost dark by the time I got back to the club. The band was waiting around for the Sunday rehearsal. We ran through one number, and then things got cloudy.
Now, Kelly.
You're early, Dex.
Close enough.
No, not for me. You said 6 o'clock.
Your horn's no match for this gun. Give me the envelope.
6 o'clock, Dex. All right. Let's try someday, sweetheart. Hand me that plunger, will you, Red? I'll give you the pickup.
Thank you.
All right. You can pack up. I'll see you at 10.
You gonna give me that envelope or do I blow it out of your pocket?
The same way you handled Louise Davis?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do. You killed her and you killed her brother.
You got it all figured out, haven't you,
Kelly? Horn player's right, Dex. Don't turn around.
You got it wrong, Lud.
I don't think so. I never should have let you kill Benny. That should have been the tip-off and that kid in the church and Benny's sister. You had to make the big try.
It was for me and you, Lud.
It won't wash. You're gonna die, Dex. Pick a spot to lay down.
Not in the back, Lud. You'd give me a better chance than that.
Would I?
Look out, Lud!
Like I said, Dex, pick a spot! Well, that wraps it up, Kelly.
You better sit down, Lud.
No, this'll do. It won't be a long wait. I don't mind standing.
Suit yourself. 6 o'clock, Lud. Here's your envelope.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hello, Pete.
Hi, Father.
Just going to stop by. I heard the gunshots. I knew you'd be around.
Well, let me tell you again, Father. I'm sorry about Jake. I don't know what else to say. I'm just sorry.
I believe you. We'll have the funeral for little Jake tomorrow. Maybe you want to stop by.
Yeah. Some things never figure. A 9-year-old kid shot down. No reason for it. None in the world. 9-year-old kid.
It's done, Pete. Don't waste your pity on little Jake. He's got a big lead on both of us.
I don't get you, Father.
You and I should die as good as a 9-year-old.
Pete Kelly's Blues, starring Jack Webb, with story by Jim Moser and music by Dick Cathcart. Scoring by Matty Matlock.
Well, a sad but sweet story. Jack Webb was known to be a big fan of Dixieland jazz and blues music. And as I said, that series only lasted over the summer in 1951, and he moved on, I think, to the Dragnet radio show started not too far beyond that particular date. We'll take a look at the show billing for next week, and we'll get to those stories of these people that did the through hikes. It's the Journeys Magazine for Appalachian Trail Council conference has a story of 10 women, elderly women, older women, above 56, 57, 61, and one has a full-page picture in color of a woman 73 years of age with her pack on who did the all 2,104 miles. Well, Audrey's giving me the signal. It's time to go, and I'm sure we'll meet again, and we'll have Vera Lynn take us out again. See you next week.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know where, don't know when, but I know.